gentlemen, this is a special Such Good Shoot interview extravaganza! So join Isaac, Dozer, and Shane in lighting up a cold one and cracking open a joint here on Such Good Shoot!
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are here for another very special edition of Such Good Shoot. And today, Shane and myself are joined by the one and only, the one dirty bitch, man. We got ODB in the house.
What's going on?
Welcome.
We are so excited to have you here. This is really, oh my God, my cat's already jumping in the way, causing trouble. But Shane's girlfriend, Erin, is going to be very happy that we got a cat sighting so early on.
Yes.
So welcome. Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
Are you in Minnesota right now?
I am. I just moved back home literally a week ago.
Wow. Do you travel back and forth? You go to Florida in the winter, or are you staying put now?
No, we're gonna stay put in Minnesota and then take the winter off and go see what happens in the winter. But the food truck is officially staying in Minnesota.
Oh wow!
Unless your ass wants to book it, you can ship that bitch and I'll fly.
Yeah, I'm sure doing those long hauls.
But it's hard. Like, it was nice. You know, I went to Florida for the winter. Did the food truck. I mean, it was hard trying to find my niche there and trying, you know, the bookings. And I had WrestleMania was great, obviously, yeah. Tampa. And then Bike Week in Daytona were great, but the in-between stuff. And then, because people just think, oh, you have a food truck. Well, you can just drive here and here. And I'm like, it doesn't work that way. You got to think, where are you cooking? Where are you doing this? Where, you know?
Yeah, there's so much. There's so much that goes into it. And yes, you're speaking of Bike Week down there. Shane and I both have a friend, Matt, who runs
Ormond
Beach Cigars. And yeah, man. And I got to say, yeah, that must have been wild doing Bike Week there. I mean, what a crowd they get. I mean, that must have been insane. I mean, how many people are you doing in a day?
It's, oh shit, at least 1,000, you know.
Wow.
It becomes long because you're there for, it's 10 days.
Yep.
You know, I left the food truck. I was at Cackleberry Campground.
Yep.
And there's about 5 of us there. It's trailers, carny people. Yeah. Not like the only actual food truck. But you stay, you know, it's basically you open up at 10 a.m. and you're done at, you know, there was one time I stayed open until about 2. That was only one day.
Hey, but yeah, but in those situations, I mean, I've done fair circuits with my truck and stuff. And it's such a weird, experience because like you just get in this weird time warp.
Yep.
And you're just like in the trailer all day.
But then sometimes I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm closing early. If you didn't get me, you can get me tomorrow. I'm not staying because there's a time for it. You gotta like, you can't kill yourself.
And you have that control.
Yeah.
Like if you run out of food, you run out of food. You close the window, and that's like that's ideal. You know, in the end is like because then people are like, damn, I can't believe I got to come back tomorrow and get
right?
it.
Right. Yeah. Because you got so many, you know, especially drunk people at Bike Week. I mean, there's drunks at noon, but especially at you know, midnight, they're coming around and they just want something, you know, easy like that. I had a pizza guy next to me and he was killing it with his, you know, $4 slices of pizza.
Oof, yeah. Yeah. Talk about
a $4 slice of pizza from a food truck.
So I'm like, that's
yeah, that's what you do. I mean, I know when I was doing those kind of events, they had like a, you know, they would take a cut of, you know, whoever was organizing would, you know, they want like 10% or whatever. And we just raised our prices by whatever that percentage was.
That's the thing. Like when you go, like we just got done 4th of July weekend. We did 3 big concerts at casino amphitheaters in Minnesota. They were great. But yeah, you got it because, you know, vendors have a fee that you have to pay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You don't realize that. Like it costs money to go there. And then you got to. We were at Treasure Island Casino in Red Wing, Minnesota, and we had to purchase – Pepsi was there, so we had to buy Pepsi products to
yes.
serve. Well, we're buying it at $30 a case.
Yep.
And we had to sell it at $4 because that's what they mm-hmm. sell it for. But
yep, same thing. I had to do that with Coke. Yeah. With Coke, it was like $1.25 for a 20-ounce bottle. that we paid, and then people are giving us shit, and it's like we were like, okay, we're not doing it. We were allowed to sell we were allowed to sell like iced tea and lemonade if we made it. And so we just said, fuck it, we're not selling bottles. We'll just sell solo cups of juice. Like, we can sell it at a dollar.
Yeah, there's another trailer there that was doing AIDS and slushies. I'm like, okay, that's what we're doing next time.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that was the thing. And it's like trial and error. After a couple of years, like, you get it nailed down. And those are like the little things. But yeah, people have no idea what goes into it. Like, sometimes, you know,
people will bitch regardless, though. Like,
oh, yeah.
Me with no agency over what I sell at my job. I mean, people bitch at me, and I'm like, man, I don't even make the fucking prices. Come on now. Like, and look at me. You think I make any decisions?
So speaking of people getting a little drunk, I have one question to start here. What was in the flask?
Oh, in the flask. Oh, Lord. It depends what type of day it was.
No. Oh, yeah? Did you have booze in there? I know there was liquid in there because I seen it spilled in the ring, and sometimes there you did the gimmick was. Where you would spit in people's eyes. And
there was, because I always wanted to make sure to keep the gimmick. Like, if that flask accidentally got into the crowd, I wanted someone to pick it up and be like, oh, damn, there is something.
I was wondering, because it looks like you take small sips when you had to hit that thing before a match. Yeah,
if I was wrestling Awesome Kong, I was slamming that. I had, for the most part, back in my teenage days, there was I put Jägermeister in there, for the most part. I know there was, I know there was vodka in there, and I remember spraying it in Christy Hemme's face. Well, she kept her eyes open.
Oh, wow.
I was like, first of all, I didn't realize I had to tell her to close her eyes when she's she's like, oh my god, it's burning. I'm like, settle down, you'll be fine.
I'm sure it's not the worst thing, you know, she's gotten in her eyes over the years.
She needs Don West to help her out.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You mentioned ODB. Shane and I were watching some matches, and we were watching an ODB versus Kong versus Terra match.
California. I
think, was that No Surrender 08, I think, maybe?
Oh, that was in San Diego, California, I believe, at a pay-per-view, yeah.
Or
Glory, maybe.
Something, yeah, it was one of those. There was a weird moment though in that where Tara is out of the ring and she gets in a fight with somebody. They don't get it on camera, they get the very tail end of the altercation on camera.
Yeah,
she just storms out, and you and Kong and the referee are just standing in the ring looking like kind of bewildered.
What the fuck? Like,
and nothing happens with it. And it was just like, it was one of those moments. I was like, the match was really good. And then all of a sudden, like, you have this moment and like, there's no explanation. And I was like, what is going on? Do you know what happened there? Was there some, like, an angle that was supposed to happen?
Yeah, that was, I believe it was someone from MMA. It was someone's wife. I don't recall who it was exactly, but the whole thing is, back in the day, Lisa Marie, I guess, was going to do some MMA stuff. Obviously, it didn't happen. So, but they wanted to, like, do something in that match with it. And it obviously didn't get planned very good. Or it was just a club. I got actually pissed about it because it kind of messed the match. Like, the match was great.
Oh, no, yeah. It absolutely did.
And all of a sudden, you know, you got this person from MMA coming in, had no idea, like,
and you guys knew what was gonna, it was gonna happen, or was that a surprise for you in the match?
Yes and no. Like, I didn't even really want to pay attention to it. Just let me be surprised. I don't care. I don't even know what they're doing. And the chick that was in the crowd, I don't even think was even there. I think she showed up like literally right when the pay-per-view started. So shit like that. When you mix outside people into the wrestling business, sometimes, yeah, they think it's like, oh, whatever, you know, it's pro wrestling. You know, I'm like, get your shit together, you know?
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, they just, the production side of it just, like, completely dropped the ball, too, because it was just sort of like, what happened? And that was it.
Like, I honestly, I didn't even know about it. Like, it was
I mean, even commentary had no clue. Yeah, you know, Mike Tenay was like, "Who's that?" Like,
yep, yeah, and it just made things like, because then at the end, Raisha Saeed came out, and they had the chair finish where she was trying to get Kong to use the chair or something.
Oh yeah, and then she went to powerbomb me, but then I face
which was an incredible, like, it was so perfectly executed.
Yeah.
It looked awesome. And I just was like, man, if they hadn't tried to pull that bullshit in the middle of this match, that would have been a fucking perfect match. Yeah. It was incredible. And like, that finish was really cool. And then, but speaking of Raisha Saeed, there was one where she tackled you out of nowhere. One event, and god damn, I was
it was before that false count anywhere, right?
Yeah, it was, I think, yeah, it was before the false count anywhere match.
Yeah, I was just talking about that match.
Yeah, which was another like really good one. I think that was the one where you took a, like, you power bombed Kong onto the table,
and her
and it didn't break.
Yeah, and it hit me. Yeah, that was fun.
How much did that hurt? Those ribs, Jesus Christ, that must have been painful.
Yeah, we had to sit there. We both, like, I went to Kong. I'm like, let's stay here for a while. She's like, yep, sounds good.
Oh man,
yeah. I think another way to break the table, and I actually got a concussion in that match.
Wow.
Was that from like the running slay, like the finish where
yeah,
she
you
did
can
the corner?
See my head.
I mean, yeah, because that was fucking brutal.
Yeah.
Like he and I were both, ooh.
Yeah, no wonder you were hitting that flask so hard before that one.
I was like, where's my flask? Well, yeah, because funny story, I was actually just talking about this match and I ended up getting a concussion. So I went backstage, I was kind of fine. And all of a sudden I puked in front of everyone, you know, backstage, everyone's in the watching the monitor. I puke and I'm like, oh yeah, I think I have something. And Dutch Mantel walks by me and says, oh, she's probably just drunk.
Oh god.
Like, oh no,
really? Really?
Oh,
then
no.
Terry Taylor was like, no, you have a concussion, let's go see the doctor. So it was just a little, I mean, little one, but it was still, yeah.
Well, at least someone had some sense there.
But
Jesus.
Yeah, I was like, really? Yeah. Like, that's the one thing that I kind of look back. I'm like, that's so sad that he just walked by me and made a little comment like that. And it's like, come on now, it's a gimmick.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, and speaking of that, like, where is the line between Jesse and ODB? Like, how, like, is there much of one?
Yeah, I mean, it, like, I'm like the female Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, and he always said it's him, but with the volume turned up.
Yep.
You know, I'm really not going to places, grabbing my boobs, saying, bam, you know, a little more classier than that.
Well, hey, you know, sometimes class isn't everything, but I like the gimmick.
He's not classy.
I like the gimmick. Yeah, ODB. And I'll tell you what, I wish I had faith in anything in life like you had in those bras you wore in your matches. Because goddamn, those things are incredible. Like, that. Talk about doing their job.
Right.
Oh man. So let's go back a little bit. Let's go back to growing up in Minnesota and what that was like. You were an 80s kid?
Yes. Yes, I was. I grew up in kind of like a very good home, very loving family. My parents are still married till this day. I got one older brother. We were kind of like the Griswolds.
Yep.
Like, I had hardworking parents. That's where I get my hardworking skills from, because my parents never gave up. You know, they worked overtime. They always were working and making sure, like, we weren't spoiled, but we learned, you know, if you wanted something, you got to work for it. You know, like, if I wanted a pair of Zubas and, you know, like, because every Wednesday, it was kind of cool. Like, every Wednesday, my dad would take me, my brother out. We go to Toys R Us. We get to pick one toy out, and then we go eat at White Castle.
Oh, hell yeah. Get some sliders and chicken rings, man.
Ain't nothing wrong with a little bit of White Castle.
No, right? No. Well, there's something wrong with it the next morning, but I love me some White Castle. So you got into watching wrestling fairly young.
Yeah, like my dad would take us to wrestling shows when he'd come to Minnesota, and then we actually went to independent shows, like because you had, you know, the Ganya's AWA here.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people came from Minnesota. You know, Ravishing Rick Rude, Mr. Perfect, Road Warriors, Baron Von Roskey. Like, it's just crazy how it all started in Minnesota. You know, like Ric Flair, Hogan got their start here. And so I got to see the very first wrestler I met was Jumpin' Jim Bronzell from the Killer Bees.
Oh, wow.
We were at, the St. Paul Armory in Minnesota. And my dad actually had a friend that was the referee. So I was like, oh, cool. So we got to, you know, not go backstage, but meet the wrestlers. And then we actually would go to the gym. It's where a lot of the wrestlers hung out and worked out and stuff. And then I heard back in the day what other shit they were doing there. But they, we got to meet, well, Larry Zbyszko was there. I remember me and my brother were in the parking lot. We're just waiting, sitting there with our Zubas on and, you know, hoping to see it, being one of those creepy wrestling fans, I guess.
That was what you did, man.
And then Larry Zbyszko came out. He's like, beat it, kids. What a dick. But then we went in, and Barry Darso, Smash from Demolition.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah.
I still have the picture, actually.
Oh, that's so cool.
Together. And it's funny because we were dressed the same. We both had Zubas on. We both had a mullet, I think. And then I had my Venice Beach muscle shirt on.
Well, one of our other co-hosts, Dozer, he is like a Zubas fanatic. He still rocks them. Shane actually just got a pair of Zubas for his birthday.
Yeah, so it was a birthday gift they, for my lovely girlfriend.
If
they're,
you
comfortable
go on,
as hell.
Yeah,
right.
If you go on their website now, you can get a Road Warrior Zubas mask, like wrestling mask.
Oh, that's good, because they were like the two people that supported. Yeah. That were like the faces of Zubas.
Yeah. Which is really funny. It's just like, you know, you look back and you're like, man, those don't look as badass as they thought they did. But I guess no one's going to say that to the Road Warriors. No one's going to be like, dude, you kind of look foolish, man.
They were cool.
So do you ever get to work out at the gym, or is the gym still operating in that area?
Oh, that place, like, guys, probably be at least 20 years gone, because it was already gone when I started wrestling.
Gotcha.
It was long gone.
Man, what a cool experience to get to, like, to see that. Well, we're going back a little. I'm gonna play a little clip for you, and I'm just curious as to what you think about this.
Okay. Oh boy. Yeah, good old Super Bowl halftime show. Oh my god.
So,
you know what? That's actually voted the worst Super Bowl halftime show in history.
You were in it. Yeah, tell me about that. How did you get booked for the Super Bowl halftime show?
I was getting booked as a kid.
Yeah, how does that happen?
Well, I was in dance, tap, jazz, and ballet as a dance. I started 4 years old and went till about 15. And my brother danced too, and he was actually one of the main dancers in the halftime show with Gloria Estefan.
Wow.
And he was very good. And then a bunch of us tried out for it, and from our dance studio. And I was one of the ones that got picked, and I was like, yeah. So it was a cool experience. I mean, it was.
Well, I mean, how, yeah.
A memory for sure.
How many times do you, in your life, do you get to say you performed in front of, like, right, you know, 80,000 people or whatever is at the Super Bowl?
Freaking Super Bowl. I mean, that was, must have, God, I remember, I forget what year that was.
1992.
Oh, it was 92. Okay. Shit.
Yeah, I just. What a cool thing to have your first TV appearance be
my first booking,
on one of, like, literally the most popular like TV segments
right
all year. I mean, the Super Bowl halftime is like
yeah, once you start saying that, I'm like, yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, even if it's rated the worst, like
yeah, hey, that's even better.
Yeah, then you get to say, yeah, not only was part of the Super Bowl, I was part of the worst
Super Bowl halftime. Yeah. Worst one in history.
Yeah, like fuck it, you know, like it's like getting one of those Razzie awards. Sometimes you just gotta own that shit. But that's really cool. I come from a family. My mother is a professional dancer. She danced in the New York City Ballet. She danced with the Metropolitan Opera Company when she was young, and she's been a professor of dance for the last 40 years, maybe here in Vermont. What was that like for you as a kid? Was that something that you really wanted in life, or was this something that just sort of people were like, "Oh, you should do that. You're a little girl. Girls take ballet class."
They put a tutu on, and I was like, "Ugh!" Like I could tell, like obviously that wasn't gonna be my dream, but I obviously love the entertainment part.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also a jock, you know, growing up. I played softball and hockey, but I think the dance It was kind of cool because it was a bonding experience. Like, we went, you know, to Vegas, Detroit, Chicago, and performed in some, you know, pretty big. You ever seen that show, like, The Dance? They had a reality show with little girls and...
No, Dance Moms.
Dance Moms, yeah.
Yep.
It was kind of like that. Like, there were some hardcore dance moms and, you know, and it was a good experience. I mean, my parents are actually still friends with some of the people that... some of the dance parents, like that's pretty cool. It became like good friendships out of it, and it was a lot of money for my parents. Holy crap. Back in the day, like those costumes are not cheap, going to competitions, staying in hotel rooms, traveling, but it was good. Like, but I knew I wasn't going to be a professional dancer, but it was always funny because I was always kind of like the I look back at it, like I was in the front row and stuff, you know, most of the time too. And, you know, like jazz and tap, but I sucked at ballet. So I don't know how, like, just my balance was, I don't know what, or I just didn't give a fuck. I think that's my.
I mean, that probably, makes a difference. Did any of that training with, you know, learning choreography, et cetera, did that help with wrestling?
I think so. Cause memorizing all those dances and stuff, all be together and timing. Totally. Oh God. That was,
I mean, it seems like it's like, I mean, yes, it's very different, but at the same time, you know, that's a very analog thing.
And I think it obviously helped me be more, you know, get me obviously more balance and more, you know, I wasn't the most flexible dancer because I could never do the splits.
Well, you look at other professional athletes, and there's a lot of college football players that'll take ballet and take dance classes to help, you know, keep themselves limber and stretched out and stuff. And I know that was one of the things my mom experienced too, is, you know, like a lot of the athletes would take her classes and like, it's really funny because like they had no interest in dance, but they also like were very like, you know, you know your body, like, you know, you're in tune with what's going on. So it was like a really weird balance. It's like, you guys could do really well at this if you cared.
Big football.
Oh, that's good. So, you didn't want to be a dancer. Do you want, you wanted to do the American Gladiator? Is that, I think every kid in the 80s and 90s
show, like all these muscle people jacked, and the chicks were all jacked up, and I'm like, oh, so I started, you know, lifting weights, but obviously, you know, to get there, it was a little different, but the competition and I think, and then it kind of like, because in the back of my head, like when I was watching wrestling, and those guys were larger than life, and I didn't really think a normal person can actually become a wrestler, you know. And like when I'd be watching, you know, like Macho Man, Honky Tonk Man, Jake the Snake, and they were just a large. They don't make guys like that anymore. They don't have larger than life characters, you know. Like
That's one of the things that I think, you know, I talk about it sometimes in the show is that it feels like nobody is trying to like as a business to elevate these people to something that's bigger than the business itself.
Yeah. And that's why people always say, oh, why are you bringing these old timers back? Because they draw. They put asses in the seats.
Yeah.
Because there's, that's pretty sad when you can't, you know, like everyone, hopefully's goal is to, you know, main event WrestleMania, main event Bound for Glory, you know, do all this. And it's just, it's slacking. Like, it's really like just, yeah, it's kind of sad. Like, I'll go backstage in certain, you know, companies, and I just look around. I'm like, man, no one's stepping it up. Like, they just worry about that match, and then they go on their, you know, phone, Twitter, and see who's over. And oh my god, you see this? Oh my god, they love it. Ugh, I got 500 likes. Ugh, shut up. Like, try.
Just is that like conversation up that actually happens backstage? Like, oh, yeah, Twitter.
Pretty much.
Oh, Jesus. Like, okay.
The guys going like this, and like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, dude, you're not fucking over.
And I mean, I guess I shouldn't be surprised about that, but
yeah,
I mean, it is kind of that we are in that age where it's, you know, it's all about
internet
clout, and you know, you
social media, man,
like some of the things that, you know, like people like the, you know, like the internet is a very interesting place if you're a wrestling fan, because a lot of the times you can't voice your opinion, because right. if you say what you really feel, man, you're going to have a million angry people telling you that you don't understand pro wrestling, you know? And it's like, oh, you just don't understand. I don't know how many times I've been told I don't understand storytelling ring. And I'm like, yeah, but like, I do get it. Cause I've been watching this my whole life, and I know what I like. But right? Just because we don't generally like the same thing, like, doesn't mean I don't understand what's happening. And yeah,
there's good old internet.
Yeah, too much Twitter sometimes. So going to getting into the business, like what got you to go and try out for Tough Enough? And what was that experience like? Can you talk a little bit about like what the behind the scenes action was like trying to get into that whole program?
I'm thankful I didn't make it that route. Cause who knows where I would be right now. And so I remember watching, it was probably SmackDown or forget which one it was. And Jerry Lawler and Jim Ross, they're like, you think you have what it takes to, you know, are you tough enough to become a WWF wrestler? And I was like, what is this? And it basically said, make a video. And so me and my brother had our VHS tape, and we made a video saying, you know, and I called myself ODB already, One Dirty Bitch. And we promoted it like, you know, coming from Minnesota where legends are made. And so it was kind of cool. And I remember like the video, I wonder if I still have it. I was walking up a pile because it was in the wintertime. I was walking up a pile of snow. my brother was taping it, and it's cool. Like, it's that I got a call, I sent the tape in probably a couple weeks or so. Got the call from WWF saying, you know, you're one of the finalists. I was like 250 people, I believe, got sent from New York. That's when they had the WWF like restaurant out there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Times Square. So I got sent there. So my parents came with me. And then basically it was like 2 or 3 days, I believe. So the first day was like your big interview. You actually got to go in a WWF ring. Wow. And you had to cut a promo. But before the promo, they wanted to blow your ass up. So you had to take, they give you an exercise to do in the ring. And I had to shuffle back and forth for like 30 seconds or a minute maybe. And then grab the mic and cut a promo. And I called, I'm like, I'm One Dirty Bitch.
How old were you at that point?
So I was 23 maybe.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
23. Yeah. And then I remember it was Taz, Jackie Moore, Al Snow. I believe Mick Foley was there. I think that was it for like my panels.
Wow. And, like, and that's an incredible.
I know, right? And then it's ended up working with all of them. It's pretty damn cool.
I got to say, though, putting Mick Foley on that panel is kind of like a weird move, considering he seems like literally the nicest human being on the planet. Right, yeah. Like, I can't imagine him like trying to like tell someone that they don't don't have it. Like, I'm sorry, you just
say it like, yeah, you're a good person, but
you seem really lovely.
Yeah.
Oh man.
It was good. Like Taz actually was more of the hardcore person, but he wasn't hard on me. He was like, "Oh, you call yourself one dirty bitch," and just started laughing. He's like, "That's great." And then
it's a great name.
It worked. Like, yeah, it took me years, you know, to really develop the character. But Al Snow actually remembers me literally from the first day of Tough Enough. He's like, out of all the people, he's like, "You stuck out."
Wow.
Then I made it to the top 20, and then they finalized it to the top 12 to go into the house. But and Al even told me, he's like, "We all wanted you. WWF wanted you on the show, but MTV did not. They didn't see a story. They're like, she doesn't have a story. She doesn't have, you know."
Didn't they really want you to be a lesbian?
Yeah. They kept asking me. And I was a quiet, you know, I was more reserved and shy back then. So
from Tough Enough, what happened then? I mean, is that when you were like, I think I really want to do this? And did you go to OVW after that?
No.
Or was there in between?
Yeah, I went to OVW like 5 years, I think, in the business. So right when I got home, I looked up schools, and Eddie Sharkey, who's trained the Road Warriors, Rick Rude, Mr. Perfect. And I went to his school. It was basically just in a warehouse, like in a garage and stuff. And he teamed up with the Money People's Midwest Pro Wrestling. And then Eddie Sharkey was kind of like the face of it to get people in there.
Yeah.
Like, I trained legends. And that's where I started with Sean Daivari and Austin Aries and Eric Cannon. And that's where, then training, I want to say at least 3 days a week, but sometimes five. Like, we just go in there like at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and go until about 10. And then afterwards we go to Subway and eat sandwiches and then bullshit about wrestling. That was kind of
that sounds like a good time, and definitely like some really incredible talent to get to train with. Like, talk about guys who really are very good in ring. Getting to work with that's
kind of cool. Like, the people that I met in the beginning were very successful in the business, so it's kind of cool to see everyone. It's kind of weird. When you have a group of people that make it, it's cool to see. We all went so many.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned that OVW in that class. You know, OVW that you had Lesnar and you had Randy Orton and Cena and just name
my
after.
Group was like. You know, you had Punk, Cabana, Cody Rhodes, Sean Spears, Ryback, Ziggler, and the girls, Beth Phoenix and Mickey and Melina just went up as I went in. And then me and Serena kind of helped the women's division get built again. So, yeah.
How much interaction did you have with those guys? What was working with a guy like Punk at that time? Like,
they were cool. Like, I've known him in the beginning, when I first started. So I did a lot of shows with him, like in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Chicago, and he was cool. Like, he just stayed true to himself, you know?
He gets a lot of heat, especially these days, but I mean, I always thought he was an incredible talent. And,
I liked it. When he cuts promos, like, he's real. Like, so many people are so
you believe
afraid,
it.
So afraid to do this, and especially with me, like, I would rather ask for forgiveness. Like, I did so much stuff that if I didn't do it, there would be no ODB. Like, I crossed the line many a times.
Yeah. If Punk came back to the business as a non-wrestler, what would you like to see him do?
Oh, boy. I just love his mic skills.
So put him out maybe as a manager or something.
Yeah, like, step it up. Like, I would love for him just to go off on some of these workers.
I would too. I miss his promos. I think
he would be good too. But I would
He was so good. I mean, I remember the episode where he got to wear Triple H's blazer and do the commentary with. Oh God. He was so entertaining. So entertaining. Yeah, that's really cool. What a cool class. What was the OVW experience like as a whole for you?
Oh God, I loved it. I look back. Those are some of my favorite times. like, it was rough, you know, because I wasn't getting paid. I wasn't officially under contract ever. Mm-hmm. But Al Snow and Danny Davis let me train with all the contract guys. And I remember, like, WWF was like, you know, why is she always on TV? Why is she the champ? We're not paying her. We're paying these other girls. And I was like, then fucking start paying her. You, like, hire her. Like, they're, what are you guys doing? They're like, oh, no, she doesn't fit the diva mold and blah. It was like, oh, now you look at it. It's like, now they all are all so different, which is awesome. But just each era was different, you know, like.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, you really, like, you hit this weird spot in between, yes, like, two generations of wrestling where that character would have been just perfect. Like, you look at, you know, putting, you know, your character in its prime in yeah, NXT or in AEW or, you know, or even on the main roster, although God only knows what they would fucking do.
Right, yeah.
But like, legitimately, like, it's so perfect. It would have been perfect in the Attitude Era. Although they still didn't care enough about the wrestling, I feel like, to do you justice. But man, nowadays, like, with that character, with your look, like,
right? It's just, yeah. But I'm glad it all turned out. Like, if, you know, even though I never got an opportunity to go to WWE or whatever, but
it's probably for the best.
Exactly. I mean, it's because a lot of people are like, you know, why didn't you go there? I never really knocked on their door. Like, before TNA, I did, obviously, yeah, right now. But after that, I was like, TNA, this, let me do my thing. Even though I didn't, you know, I didn't make millions in wrestling, but look at me now where it's at. Like, it obviously helped me now.
You own your name.
Yeah.
Like, you can use
myself.
Yeah, you can use that to help. Yeah, you can help use that to build whatever your next step is.
Right.
And that's awesome.
It definitely all worked out. So yeah. Just a longer road.
You mentioned with your time in TNA your favorite segment was your wedding to EY.
Yeah.
That looked like a blast. That looked like a really fun segment, making the priest take his clothes off and take his pants off.
we were nervous because we're like, this, we have to have this be an awesome segment. Like, we were getting nervous about it, and then, you know, we were like, okay, we just got to make it. And me and him have great chemistry. Like, we were just winging it, and then it worked out. Like, I look back, I'm like, I was actually entertained, because some, you know, you never know if, like, people are gonna interrupt it, but we actually, you know, went through with it on the show, and it was, that was,
well, they had the interruption thing, and yep, they sort of teased that, and then he's like, nope.
Yeah. And that was great, because I was a little nervous about that, too. Me and EY both were. I'm like, oh, I hope they're... But they were great, girl. Like, they're awesome.
You look amazing in a wedding dress, I gotta say.
Oh, thank you. I still have the wedding dress. I want to put it up for sale and put the money I make on it to charity. So I'm like...
Oh, that would be awesome.
I'm really trying to push... I'm going to start selling... a lot of my outfits. I don't have many outfits, but just random stuff I wore, you know, in TNA. And
that's so cool. Yeah, especially that one is such a memorable outfit.
Yeah, it's still hanging up in my closet in my RV. I'm like,
and what a cool segment. And after that, you got to rub skin with Hulk Hogan, huh?
That was funny because I remember backstage, like, obviously the lights went out, because it was taped.
Yeah.
And then me and EY are in the ring. They're like, so I'm going to open this cage for us so we can get out. It's kind of awkward once the cameras go off. You're like, okay, yep, now let's get out of here. So we go back, and then I go through the curtain. First person I see is Hulk Hogan. Everyone's standing up clapping, because that's the one thing, like, as a worker, like, you want to experience that one thing where, at one time where people are standing up clapping for you.
Yeah, especially the boys, like, in the back.
Yeah, like, that was awesome. Like, the first person I see is Hulk. He's like clapping, and he's like, "You need a shirt?" And I'm like, "Nope, I'm good." And he gave me a hug. So I was pretty cool. I'm like, "Yeah, that's pretty badass."
That's wild. Yeah, especially going from, you know, watching those guys as a kid with your dad to...
I know, right?
having him be the guy who's like giving you the standing ovation and giving you that curtain call and being like,
to meet my parents too, because my parents would come to pay-per-views and stuff and backstage, and then Hogan, I said, oh, hey, Hulk, here's my parents. He's like, oh, my God, we just love having ODB, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah.
How stoked, how excited was your dad for that?
Yeah, and it sucks because I didn't take any pictures. It's just like...
But your dad is an old wrestler. That must have blown his mind. He must have been so excited.
Yeah, and they got to meet Ric Flair, too, so that was
good. Oh, wow. That's so cool.
What I loved about bringing... I mean, I only brought family backstage, you know, like... But yeah, that was pretty, because, you know, like some, you know, how you get, if you're in town or whatever, and some of your friends are like, oh, can I get backstage tickets? I'm like, nope. Nope.
That's for mom and dad.
Yeah.
When you were doing like entrances and stuff, you would grab beers from fans. Fans would give you beers and you would drink them. After this last year, is that something that if you do make appearances ain't coming back?
I survived it all.
I gotta say that is such a cool entrance gimmick. I loved it. Both Shane and I were talking about how awesome it is that you're just like, you walk down and you're just slamming their beers.
I didn't even think about it. I'm like, yeah, I'm just grabbing a straw. Like, no, they could have roofied it or.
I just said backwash, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
like, yeah, free drugs, right?
Well, here I go. Yeah, they could. Yeah, probably wasn't the smartest thing, but yeah.
Oh, man. So I got one more wrestling question, and then I want to talk about your food truck a little bit and about what you got going on now. And this is. I watched the Briscoe Brothers training video that you did. God damn, that is so entertaining. That is like hilariously funny, but also like the Briscoe Brothers are two of like the most terrifying wrestlers, I think. Like they're those guys, like I'm sure like they're probably really
badasses,
yeah, but like you see those guys and they come up to you on the street and they're like, I'm gonna beat your ass. I'm 6'3", I'm like 230 pounds, I am running as fast as I can. are they nice guys?
Oh my God, they're like the sweetest guys ever. Like, yeah. I remember when we went there and taped, we were on their farm, their family farm, and
which is their real chicken farm.
Oh my, it was so fun. Like his parents were there, both their wives were there, all their kids, and then afterwards, because Matt Sydal was there too, and it was Hunter, Hunter who runs Ring of Honor, and so we all stayed for dinner and had chicken, of course. But yeah, it was great. Like it was
such a good video.
Like that's what I miss. Like with Ring of Honor too. Like they missed the boat with that. Like we could have ran with me and the Briscoes for a long time. Like
it would have been awesome. Oh my God, it worked so well.
I remember that when I was a surprise, like no one knew, and it was actually at the Nashville Fairgrounds, which is where TNA started.
Yeah.
So perfect that I came back during that time. And because I left TNA and then I was kind of just not, you know, talked about or whatever. And everyone's like, oh, what happened to ODB? And all of a sudden I show up in Ring of Honor, because that was kind of like the first crossover, I think, especially for women.
Yep.
Like they weren't, the women's division wasn't really started back then. And I showed up and then got to wrestle with Maria with the Kingdom, and people went nuts. Like they had no idea I was there. Like it felt good because it's like, wow, I actually kept a secret. No one stooged it out. And you know,
and they remembered you.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, that's right? Always kind of, yeah. I mean, I'm sure that's one of those things. Like I hear from a lot of people I talk to is like, you know, like you always have that in the back of your head. Do they still remember me? It's been a little while now. And
they know.
Well, that promo video is incredible. Papa Briscoe.
Oh yeah.
I swear to God, he can cut a better promo than like 80% of the wrestlers today. Like, goddamn. Right? Like he's so good. Yeah. But oh yeah. As soon as your RV pulled into their lawn, I just lost. I started laughing.
Matt Sydal actually was driving it.
I was gonna say you popped out real quick.
That was hilarious.
So that gets us sort of getting into the RV. So you were doing the RV lifestyle.
Yeah.
Are you looking to buy a house up there now? Or are you gonna do this?
We like, because I bought the Airstream back in 2013. I've had it for 7-8 years now.
Yeah.
I always liked it, and then I had it remodeled and restored and everything. And then after my wrestling days were kind of coming to an end, 2014 or 15 or whatever it was, I wanted to go out, and I went by myself, pulled my Airstream, went to festivals, promote my barbecue sauce, and I just liked it. Like, I never, you know, was obviously now I have everything on wheels, but now me and my man, we just bought a brand new 2021 fifth wheel.
Oh, hell yeah.
So I still have my Airstream, but now it's an Airbnb.
Oh, nice.
So I have, it's in Oklahoma. It's getting a little TLC right now, but it will be out hopefully by August, where people can rent it out. And it's in Oklahoma at Red Rock Canyon. It's a glamp.
Oh, wow.
Oh, nice.
The glamp ground. So
it's
going to have the story of me, you know, obviously that's mine. And so I'm excited for that. I actually have to fly down, I think, in a week to Oklahoma to get it all staged and set. So people can stay in the famous Airstream.
That's awesome. And bam.
Yeah.
So how did the barbecue sauce come about? How did that start?
Well, I did a cooking show with Joey Fatone, My Family Recipe Rocks, back in, it had to have been 2014, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And that got a lot of air. Like, it, you know, it got noticed, and someone contacted me and said, hey, you know, would you ever think about doing, you know, your own barbecue or hot sauce line? I was like, I never really thought about it. So I teamed up with Pepper Palace. They're nation's top hot sauce place, and they're located in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. So that's my manufacturer, and they helped me. We worked together, and we created a whiskey barbecue and a whiskey hot sauce, and they've been great. Yeah, so it's
they do all the co-packing and stuff for you. That's awesome.
I don't get in my Airstream or nothing.
I did that for a little while. Before my barbecue truck, I had a business where I made packaged and sold bacon jam, like spreadable bacon.
Oh, really?
And I wish I had just gone the co-packing route, because it's just like, oh my god, you know, people just don't understand like what goes into that. It's just like label design and jar design, and like what you're gonna like. There's so much like little tiny like buying and making barcodes.
Oh, like, yeah. That's why I'm glad I have someone that took care of that.
I was going to ask, because that stuff is And so from there, you just, you're like, well, I got this barbecue sauce, and like.
Yeah. And then I traveled. Like, I went, my first ever vendor spot was Sturgis 2016, I believe.
Wow,
15. 2015 was my first, like, go big or go home. It's like, I mean, kind of so much money just to be there and then like sell it. Like, I mean, I look back, good experience, but yeah, it was a long road to get to my food truck. You know, I didn't realize I was going to have a food truck until, cause I did that for a couple years and I wasn't making no money. I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And then someone's like, you should do a food truck. I'm like, oh, okay. Dive right into that. My first year or two were a shit show, but
always is. You just, I mean, especially, I mean, I, you know, like when I went into it, I didn't have any food truck experience, but I've been a chef and working in restaurants since I was, you know, like 16, 17, you know, like I was a party kid, and I was like, oh, this is a job that I don't have to be to work until 2 p.m.
Right.
And I get out at like 11 o'clock and, or whatever. And then I can just party all night. Like, sweet. And, you know, then as I grew up, I was like, man, I want something that I can do. But yeah, there's such a learning curve there. And I'm like, I'm really impressed with the success you have with that. And because I know how hard it is.
I mean, I definitely took a dip and stuff, especially with the food truck, and started in Daytona Beach at Jimmy Hart's bar, like in front of it, and then came home with it. And it belongs here. Like, I tried the Florida thing. It was great, but I've built something pretty damn cool in Minnesota where I have a nice following. And it just needs to be, you know, stationed here. And it's just great because everywhere I go, it's just nice to, people have been following my journey. And But it's, you know, it's
nice to have a home base.
Yes. Yeah. And I look at some of the very successful food truckers out on, you know, social media, and I kind of see what they're doing, and they have one home base, and that's how they got built. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, all right, we're staying here. We're going to build this even more. And, you know, you never know, possibly another food truck franchise, right? You never know where it can take you.
That's have you thought about doing things like, you know, going back and just doing the big events in Florida, like Bike Week and things like that? Or is it just not worth the time and travel?
You know, yeah, that's a bitch to drive. I mean, I got it shipped back to Minnesota, which ain't cheap, but
I'm sure.
I didn't feel like driving it. Yep. And safety reasons, you know, but if someone wanted to book me in the food truck, they can ship this bitch out.
Yeah.
And I'll fly out. I'll meet you.
that's the way to do it. Yeah,
I've gotten especially... I've gotten to that level where it's like, no, I'm not going to be an indie food trucker and drive around getting gas money. I was like, nah, those days are over. You want this, you're going to have to fucking pay for it.
And speaking of the indies, I mean, you paid your dues. You've been through some shit with that truck. Your first trailer caught on fire, and you lost everything.
Yeah, blew up. Like, I remember it was 2 years ago, right after Labor Day weekend, right after I did AEW in Chicago. I did Starcast, right?
Yep.
And I had it there, then drove it home, and I parked it at a friend's bar right down the road where I was staying at. And all of a sudden at midnight, my phone rings. And I'm like, who's calling me at midnight? So I answer it. They're like, your food truck's on fire. I'm like, my what? So I'm like, oh, my God, get dressed, drive down. Oh, literally, no. In like 5 minutes, I beat the fire guys there. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, shit. And someone videotaped it. Like, and we watched the tape, and it just like looked like someone just turned the light switch off and just blew up. Still have no clue because there was no propane. And
so they don't know what started it.
No, like the guy was, firefighters were there, and the one guy was like, do you have any propane on here? I'm like, no. He's like, you have no propane. He's like, okay, any funny business going around? Where were you? And I'm like, honey, I would have lit this bitch on fire a long time ago. Like, and they never came back and investigated it, which was kind of like, no. And it literally sat in my friend's parking lot for almost a month because insurance was a little bitch. And he's like, can we get this out of my parking lot?
I'm sure. Yeah. And then just like having to see it and like be reminded constantly, that must have been just absolutely devastating. But it did lead to DDP reaching out to you,
right? Literally like within 12 hours I get a call, hey ODB, it's DDP. And I'm like, what's up? Because I just, thank God I did that Starcast the weekend before, because a lot of wrestlers came to the food truck and saw it, and so that actually helped me out a lot. And then all of a sudden a week later it blows up, people are like, oh shit, it was fresh in their mind, like, oh shit, I just had ODB's food truck and now it blew up. So yeah, I mean, I'm thankful that bitch blew up because it got me my dream food truck. It got me, you know, me even more out there, and it just, I didn't give up. And that was,
I mean, the exposure from the video you guys did for that, I mean, is just wild.
Cool. You don't feel like, you know, you don't really know how much you're loved until something happens like that.
Yeah. And what a great thing to have, like, some of these really just truly legendary guys come out.
Really? Yeah, no, exactly.
Like DDP
and Mick Foley.
And Mick Foley too, again, like two of the nicest guys, I think.
Jesus. So Mick and DDP can eat out the food truck. They're VIP, so they can
they can also afford to pay though.
I know, right?
Oh man, that's so cool. And like that's so incredibly nice of them to, you know, to take their time out and really help you. And now you're able to, you got yourself your new home.
Yeah.
Because of that. So
it all worked out. Yeah, this food, I had my best year ever in 2020 during this shit. I literally bought the food truck right when the world was shutting down on St. Patty's Day. I was driving home from
the party. Shit.
And I was like, oh, alrighty, just bought this brand new damn thing. But I thought outside the box. I posted on
it's
Facebook.
It's the perfect time for it, honestly.
Oh, yeah. It was, I mean, people like neighborhoods. I was killing it on neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And then.
Because it's all takeout. Yeah. It's low contact, all takeout.
The department was cool with it. They wanted, in Minnesota, mm-hmm. they wanted food truckers to be out. And I know some food truckers didn't go out, which was stupid. Like, I know some people took like 6 months off. I'm like, you are so, like, come on, think.
Yeah. I wasn't no, scared. This is the time. I even said it. I was like, man, I wish I hadn't sold mine. Because right? I would have brought it out and made a bunch of money.
Yeah, it was good.
Speaking of the truck, we have a good friend. He's one of our special correspondents, Dennis Day Jr. He's got a show, What Do You Say with DDJ? And he just wanted me to ask if you ever considered doing the Amazing Food Truck Race or any of those shows, or if that's just like, you're like, nah, I tried to do the reality show thing once when I was younger and no, thanks.
No, I would actually the cooking channel reached out to me, the food truck nation.
Yeah.
But then like COVID and shit hit and all that crap. But, we were talking for quite some time. They found me on social media. They're like, every time we put in food truck, you popped up, and then we know your history and stuff. So it was kind of cool, but they're like, we'll keep you in mind. And then all of a sudden, you know, shit show started, but, yeah, but you never got know. Like, yeah. Hopefully.
And you've got a great menu on your truck. You've got, you know, your pulled pork sandwiches with your sauce and, you know, your sides. And you got like the wraps with the shredded buffalo chicken. And then you got your cup of meat, which is meat in a cup, which is awesome. I don't know if Shane's heard of this yet. You want to just tell him how the sizing works on meat in a cup?
Yeah. So meat in a cup, you know, you get a cup. It's baked beans, pork, coleslaw, and pickle all in a cup. And I say, pick your cup size, B, C, or double D.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
It's funny when you hear people, like, they don't see it at first, and it takes a second.
Yeah. And then they're like, oh. Yeah. The one thing I had that I really was, I mean, I was proud of my food, but I had on my menu, we had three items. We had our sandwich was the pig papa. Oh. Our we had the notorious PIG platter, and then we had a Piggy Smalls sandwich.
That's fun when you can, like, all my things are all wrestling names.
Yeah.
Like, it's fun when you do that. Like, I'll do specials and I'll call it like what I do. I call it the Cactus Jack sandwich.
Oh, hell yeah.
But, like, I'll name it after wrestlers. And
the roll up, the Bamwich.
Yeah. Which
pork mania. Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. And I got to get out to Minnesota.
Hell yeah.
It looks really good. And then you also have, I want to make sure that we, you know, let everyone know all the stuff that you're doing besides that. So you can find all the information about ODB's food truck at odbsmeetandgreet.com. It's scrolling on the bottom of the screen. And then also you do life coaching these days too?
Yeah, I kind of like, I do a lot of, I just been kind of like the last year or so, you know, posting some, you know, good stuff on social media, and everyone's like, wow, you're so motivated, and you can turn a bad day into a good day. And I'm like, yeah, that's what, you know, because I've, you know, we've all struggled in our own ways, and it's kind of like, I like to share it all. And
yeah,
you know, and because people always look at wrestlers like, oh, they got it made. No, we don't. It's even,
yeah, I mean, it's people, yeah. Wrong. The people who know how hard it is. I mean, yeah. You know, just physically, it's hard. And then when you're working 300 days a year on the road, like mentally, right. It's got to be devastating. I mean, is that something that, you know, did you deal with depression at all? Or is this something that, you know, you're just trying to put out that positivity and help people?
Basically, my main thing is always stay motivated and follow your dreams. And obviously, the bigger your dreams are, the more stuff is going to come at you. Like, you know, I've had a lot of stuff just coming at me. I could have quit, but I didn't. And a lot of people quit, you know, like, stick to it. Like, that's why I always keep telling, just stay motivated, you know, and just follow your dreams. And, like, dreams do come true. But you got to work at it.
It's a lot of work. I mean, and you've done that twice now. You've proved that twice now.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get shit thrown at you. That's the best thing. Like, if I don't have a curveball coming at me, you know, and every time I do, even like we came back to Minnesota, we had, you know, like smokers were giving us a hard time, this and that. I'm like, oh my God, anything else? You know? But yeah, it's worked through it, and then, you know, something big is happening. You know what I mean? It feels like more stuff is coming at you good.
You get that momentum, you get that.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. We also, down below, we've got a link to your Pro Wrestling Tees shop. So definitely go there. You can get some of her awesome shirts. I've checked them out. I think I'm probably going to get one or two from there. Maybe the, you know.
Here's one.
If you pull. Yeah, that one. If I'll pull you. I love that one. That's that is good stuff. But yeah, I don't want to keep you any longer. I am so grateful for your time. This has been a real pleasure. And you know, we really look forward to seeing what else you do. And
oh boy,
I really, really want to get out and eat some of your food. I'm so hungry. I'm so hungry now.
We're here all summer.
Awesome. Well, from all of us, it's such good shoot. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank
we
you
appreciate
guys.
It.
Fun.
Thank awesome. You.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Such Good Shoot. If you are on YouTube, please remember to like, subscribe, and ring that bell icon. Or subscribe to us on your favorite audio catcher. Or finally, if you're on Facebook, leave a comment, like the video, and make sure to share it out to all your friends. Until next time, we have been Such Good Shoot, and have a great day.